might try this standing up today. Notice the chair is way over there. I don't think I need it. So around age 15, I made a big decision. I was going to be better at money than my dad. For the last couple of years, I'd watched him seek money and regularly go backwards. And during that 15th year of my life, our house of about 12 years was foreclosed on. We had to move out, move into a rental. And I know that really messed with my dad. My dad wasn't a stupid man. He was trying to provide for his family. And he always felt like we just don't quite have enough. And we, in one sense, we had enough, but barely. And he just wanted us to have more. And so he got caught up. This is in the late 70s. He got caught up with a bunch of the get-rich-quick schemes, not realizing that they're just that, schemes. So I make this decision that I'm going to be better at money than him. With all my experience with it, all my ability with it, and all of my determination, I'm going to be better at it than him. I realized I needed some type of income to get this going. So I started seeking ways to earn money. Now, I'd already been mowing several of my neighbors' yards. I kept doing that. But I'm 15. I'm barely old enough that maybe a business would actually hire me. And I was already into music a little bit, and I had my mom drop me off one day at a brand new music store. They just opened up within the last week or two. Didn't even have all the displays up. I don't remember. She was running another errand. She was going to be gone for about 20 minutes. So I was going to be hanging out in the music store for 20 minutes. And I didn't know it at the time, but one of the owners is on the floor trying to put together a display case. He needs another set of hands because he can't hold this piece and this piece and screw it together at the same time. So I walk over and said, "Hey, let me hold that." He thanked me. And I told him, I was waiting for my mom to come back. And I said, "Yeah, let me help you put this together." Before my mom got back, it was put together. But before I left, I said, "You guys looking for help?" He says, "Well, I've got a partner. My partner's not here right now." And he said, we just opened up. And yes, we think we're going to need an employee or two, but we kind of just don't know yet. I said, "Well, I'd like to be an employee." And he admitted, he says, "The way you help me," he says, "I would highly consider that. Just keep checking in with us." So a month or two went by, and I stopped in three or four times, and every time I'd ask, or just let them know that I was still very willing to become an employee, they hired me. I'm 15. It's not my dream job, but it's pretty close to it. I'm in a music store. I remember the very first day I worked for, my first. He asked me, he says, "So you play some guitar, right?" I said, "Yes." He says, "So you know how to tune guitars?" I said, "Yes." "We have a brand new shipment." There's like 15 guitars over in the corner still in their box. He says, "Dig one out at a time, tune it up, and put it on the wall." Some of them were a couple hundred dollars. Some of them were several hundreds of dollars. I get to go to work, get money, and hold really nice guitars. I loved it. But wasn't enough, because I had to be better at money than my dad. I knew I needed my driver's license and a car in order for this to truly work. And I'm about to turn 16. I can get my driver's license right away. I made sure on the day I turned 16, my driver's license was in the mail. It's done and over with. And I got a car. One of my friend's older sisters had a 73 Impala that did not look good at all, but it seemed to be reliable. And she said something about selling it. I said, "How much you want for it?" She says, "I think $150. I was like, "Well, that's a lot of money for me, but that's not that much money for a car." So I went home and I told my dad. And he says, "I don't have it right now, but," he says, "I think that's a good deal. I'll see what I can do." I don't know what he did, but less than a week later, he says, "Let's go get that car." So I had a car, I had a license. I had one job, well, plus my mowing jobs. Talking to the same friend, actually, we're out in front of his house playing Frisbee one day, and his neighbor walks across the street over to us, and she says, "You guys want a job?" Rob didn't, but I did. I said, "Where at?" She says, "Well, I manage the McDonald's down here." "Really?" She says, "Yeah." She says, "I'll hire you." She says, and she'd come out and say hi every now and then, so she'd gotten to know us a little bit. I said, "Did you just say I'm hired?" She says, "Yes." "Do you want the job?" I said, "Yeah, I do." So I got two jobs, part-time jobs. I'm in high school, and I'm working two part-time jobs. Well, it wasn't enough. I got on the yearbook committee, and I was designated, voted, I don't know how, remember how it came about, but I was the in charge of advertisements, or the business side of the yearbook. So there was four or five of us, but I had to make sure I divvied up the list. We had businesses in the past who had bought yearbook ads. We had to go out and make sure those hopefully would renew their ads for the coming year and see if we could get new businesses to buy. So I've got my car, and after work on the days I'm not working, I'm popping into businesses to see if they'll buy yearbook ads. I stop into this tuxedo shop, ask him if he wants to buy an ad, tell him who I am, and you know, go through my spiel. And I get done. He says, "Do you want a job?" I said, "What?" I said, "No, I'm asking you if you want to buy a yearbook ad." He says, "Do you want a job?" I said, "Doing what?" "Working for me here." "Well, yeah, I guess so." He literally hired me on the spot. I said, what about the yearbook ad?" He says, "I'll buy the smallest ad you got, but you're hired. I need you to start tomorrow." Okay. So I got three jobs. They're part-time. I'm in high school. Those three jobs, McDonald's, I worked the closing shift. So I didn't get out until, so I could work one of my other jobs right after school. Then I go to McDonald's and I could work the closing shift. The next day, I could kind of flip it the other way around. And I was putting in probably about 45 hours a week, plus going to school. I was making some money. But wasn't enough. I did that until I turned 18. The year I turned 18, I graduated high school. Well, the tuxedo rental company actually had, over those 2 years, it actually put into Lansing two more locations. And they put them inside of Myers. You're familiar with Myers, right down the road is one. But one of their locations was in the Myers in Okemos. We rented out tuxedos to people who were going on cruises, getting married, proms. But because it was Okemos, which is a fairly well-heeled community, that store turned tuxedos easily. And right before I graduated, I found out that the manager was leaving. And I went to my manager, the district manager, and I said, I want that job. And he literally groaned. He says, Aaron, I would love to give you that job. You're one of the workers I can truly count on. You're too young. I said, no, I'm not. Give me that store. I've earned the right for that store. Give me that store. You go to your bosses and you tell them, give me that store. Even if it's on probation, give me that store. I want that store. And he groaned again. But he said, I will do everything I can to sell you as my new store manager. But I am not guaranteeing anything because it was old guard. It was old guys that ran the company. They saw business their way. And I don't know what the talk was like, but a couple weeks later, he called me up, says, hey, I need to meet you with you tomorrow. He came to the store where I was working at. He says, they've agreed to hire you temporarily and see how it goes. I got rid of my McDonald's job because now this is a full-time job. They were willing to work around the Sabbath, but I was making a salary. And for an 18-year-old, it was a pretty good salary. But on top of that, I got store bonus commissions. If my store hit the numbers, I got a nice bonus. My store hit the numbers without me really trying because it was in Okemos. I felt like I was headed towards my goal. To celebrate, in a sense, I ordered a brand new Camaro from the factory. It's one of the stupidest decisions of my entire life. But I truly loved driving every second in that car. I loved that car. A couple years later, on a regular basis, my mom is handing me money to help me make that payment. I'm in debt. You don't get financially ahead by being in debt. It was almost a little over 20 years later that I had done exactly what I'd watched my dad do. Work hard. Chasing a dollar, but did nothing to keep a dollar. I was different than him. I was more aggressive with it. That means I found newer and bigger ways to get in trouble. I'd been seeking one thing and hadn't realized that in order to truly be successful in that one thing, I needed to seek other things to complement it. Things that are absolutes, absolute needs in accomplishing the first thing. Matthew 6:33. Hope you know it by memory. Seek ye first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Seek. It's a word of action. It may encompass hope, but if you stop simply at hope, you've gained nothing. You did not fulfill Christ's word by stopping at hoping for something. So seeking is not simply having hope, it's pursuing diligently and maybe even aggressively until you acquire. What I didn't consider in my teens, then in my 20s, my 30s, and going into my 40s, is that I had not sought real knowledge in how to be better at finances than my dad. I just started grasping at sticks. I was going to fail no matter how much effort I put in. And in fact, the failure was going to be more catastrophic. Because the more effort I put in, without the knowledge that was needed, the wisdom, the discernment, the deeper I was going to go. Look at how Christ finishes that verse. Seek ye first the kingdom and his righteousness. So we can't seek just one thing. Christ makes it very plain right here. This is going to be a duality. It's a combination. And at times, it's not simply a combination, but there's an order, a prescribed order, a sequence that has to be sought. So how old are you now? Don't shout it out. How old are you? What are you going to seek over the next 5, maybe 10 years? I think somebody in the back was just cringing at the thought of how old they were. What are you going to seek over the next 5 to 10 years? For some of you, it might be education. Academic education. Maybe marriage. Maybe a family. What about career? Nothing wrong in any of these. Health. Getting it better, maintaining it. Retirement. Some of you have that on the horizon in the next 10 years. What about helping? Serving others beyond your little piece of pie, beyond my family, to my neighbors, to my community? Are you going to seek how you can help serve? So now that you've got a little bit of an idea of what you might be seeking over the next 5 or 10 years, what are you gathering right now in preparation for that? That phase or those phases coming up in your life. The book of Proverbs, it places enormous emphasis on seeking wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and the fear of God. Knowledge, we can consider that just about worthless if we don't have wisdom. Because it's wisdom that guides us as to how and when to implement the knowledge. The fear of the Lord. That is the wisdom that guides us in separating good from evil. If I want to be in business, I need to be able to separate good from evil when I'm talking to those banks, don't I, guys? Psalms 34 and verse 14. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Again, the word was seek. That means don't hope for peace. Pursue it. That means we exude peace and we help maintain it. The books of the prophets, on a very regular basis, they call us to seek justice, mercy, humility, and righteousness rather than mere religion. All of those that we just mentioned start in our heart, and they're to be projected outward. So we don't just invoke justice when someone else is watching. We invoke justice in our heart first by caring about all others, wanting them to have what they deserve in the manner that they deserve it. We're not first considering our own comfort, our own security. We're making sure everyone else receives theirs first. This goes hand in hand with what's in 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 1. Pursue love and strive for the spiritual gifts, and especially that you may prophesy. It says pursue. We can use the word seek here again. Love. Strive for the spiritual gifts, and especially that you may prophesy. Here's some of the spiritual gifts we should seek or pursue. Faith. Where is the truth at? Who holds it? Who gives it? And how much of it do we possess? Giving. Not just when we feel like it. That was my approach in my early years. Or when I feel like I have enough, I got a little bit of extra, now I'll give. But consistently, in every situation. I'm not talking about simply finances. I'm talking about time, experience. Give. Healing. Believers are supposed to have the ability to heal. Can we? Do we? Have we witnessed it? Have we prayed without ceasing until there is healing? Do we realize the healing doesn't always come in the form that we ask it to come in? But we still ask. evangelism. We are to be encouraging and spreading the gospel. Hospitality. Again, the comfort of others. Do we invite them in, or do we create little cliques that we keep them out of? Leadership. All of these are for males and females. Mercy is another gift of the Spirit. Teaching, discernment. Discernment, that's a word we don't use often enough, maybe consider often enough. That is, for me, I phrase it this way. One of the guys I listen to every now and then, he phrases it, it's that quiver of the liver. You ever get just that gut instinct, something's not right. I don't like being here. Something's not right. I want to leave. I think that's God talking to us on a regular basis. It's not always about a fear factor, but every now and then we get that nudge. Give so-and-so a call. I haven't talked to so-and-so in a while. I need to give him a call. Give them the call. I need to check on such and such. There's just that inner voice, that inner feeling. There's a nudge that you can't put your finger on. That's discernment. You should be able to walk up to a group of people, introduce yourself, them introduce yourselves, and you should start getting a feel. That's a person I can spend some time with. That's a person I'm not spending any time with. That environment over there, nope, not touching it. That environment, yep, I'll spend some time over there. We're not going to be successful in whatever it is we're seeking unless at least some or all of the gifts needed for that item we're seeking comes through God's Holy Spirit. The last of that verse in 14 verse 1, 1 Corinthians 14 verse 1, Paul mentions that he would have us especially seek, pursue prophecy. What? Me? Prophesy? I remember when Saul started prophesizing. And that seemed odd. Prophesying means to speak under divine intervention. You know God's word and you can rightly divide it as you talk to others. You hear God's voice. And I say, because in the moment, you're literally asking him, Father, give me the correct words right now. I need them bad. I'm going to come back to this here in just a few minutes. Go to Isaiah 55 and verse 6. Isaiah 55 verse 6 says, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Does that sound scary to you? It should. That means there's times when he may not be found. God does not dwell with evil. So if there's something evil taking place, Should we expect him to be at a distance? You and I are going to be tempted by Satan. But are we prepared to fight off the temptation? Or does Satan have something up his sleeve that he knows he can get us to run towards it? A time, an event, a series of events. He's been known to pile it on until you break. How easy do you think it will be to find God while you are doing nothing to give him reason to consider you? He doesn't go away. He doesn't have to. He's God. He's sovereign. It's his space. It's us that creates the distance. If any of you ever went to a corn maze, especially as a kid, six, 7 years old, mom, dad take you into a corn maze, but then you decide to go running off on your own ahead of them. Turn a couple of corners and all of a sudden, wait, that's a dead end. Wait, that's a dead end. So you run out of the dead ends and run down, oh, that's the way back, and you run down there a little bit further and into another dead end. Well, this must be the way, and you run a little bit further and then, oh, another dead end. As soon as we realize we're lost, shouldn't we just stop? Stop running. You don't know if you're running to something or away from something. Stop. Cry out. Father, I need your help. This is an area where I've really screwed up. I didn't stop and ask for help. I kept earning money, I kept spending money, finding different ways to do it. Seemed like everything was going great. Nothing could touch it, except for 2008 and the housing crash. That was it. That's it. At 18, I got baptized. Not because I was seeking God, per se. I didn't have a problem with him. I didn't have a problem with church. I didn't have a problem with religion. I didn't have a problem with what I was taught as I grew up. But the reason I got baptized is because it was just the next natural thing in the events of life. Around 18, you just get baptized. Don't you? That's when I should have started seeking God, seeking a relationship with God. A relationship where it was grounded on the fact that he had all the knowledge. I had no experience, I had no knowledge, and I just had a bunch of wants. A relationship where I would ask, and then I would receive. I mean, I would listen, I would wait. And once I heard, I'd go, okay, I've got this. I'm going to put this to use now and implement it. And all while glorifying him. For 20 years, more than 20 years, I tried doing things my way, getting deeper in debt and further from God. At 45, I find myself staring directly at financial ruin, bankruptcy. once again, I decided to seek the wrong thing. I started seeking human help that would help me maybe avoid the worst of whatever all this was going to turn into, because I knew it was going to be bad. My friend Andy, he had just went through just about as many years going from seeking the wrong to seeking God and his ways. I didn't know anything about that at the time. I just knew that Andy was one of my friends in my contacts. Well, I wouldn't say friends. He was an acquaintance through the feast. He was just an acquaintance that I was pretty certain might have some inside knowledge as to how all of this was going to go down and maybe give me a couple of small buffers that I could implement. A few minutes ago, I talked about the pursuit of prophecy that each of us should pursue. Again, that means to speak under divine inspiration. You know God's word and you can rightly divide it. You hear God's voice because in the moment you're seeking or asking him to give you the correct words to say to another. I didn't know it at the time, but I was about to hear God's voice through one of his true prophets, Andy. I don't know if even Andy knew that at the time. There's another verse that kind of talks or ties into with this that I like when I talk about Andy. I like bringing up this verse. It's James 5 and verse 19. It says, "My brothers and sisters, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and is brought back by another," I think a prophet. "Brought back by another, you should know that whoever brings back a sinner from wandering will save the sinner's soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins." Though Andy, earlier in life, had pursued some of the worst of the world, when he decided to pursue God, he was all in. God found him to be trustworthy. I think God found him to be trustworthy with Aaron's life. So that evening, God, through Andy, asked me, "Aaron, what are you seeking? Why haven't you asked me?" Why don't you have a relationship with me? Those weren't Andy's words. What came out of Andy's mouth was, "Aaron, you just told me you're going through the worst situation in your life. I've got three questions for you. Do you pray? Do you read your Bible? And do you give back all that God requires?" And I truthfully answered, "No." And Andy came back with, "You just told me you're going through the worst situation you've ever experienced in your life. You acknowledged that God was the only one that could probably get you through it or out of it. And you're not giving him a single reason to help you out of it." I told Andy, "I'm all in. I'm all in." Those 20-some years after baptism, it was hard for me, I shouldn't say to find God, but to see God. Because he was there. During those 20-some years, he blessed me with a phenomenal career in jewelry. an awesome employer, a beautiful wife, three awesome boys, a wonderful church family throughout it all. But it was like I had blinders on. I couldn't look back and realize how much he had been putting things together for me. Now's our time to solidify our relationship with God so that he can continue whatever phase we're at, guiding us through life, because life is coming at us. We can go about it without God's help, and it may feel comfy for a while. It may feel complete. It may feel successful. How many here recognize the name Garrett Mitchell? Really, nobody? Okay, he goes by another name, Cletus McFarland. Now I see a couple hands go up. Garrett, in his late teens, early 20s, meets a guy up in Idaho who is into fast cars, but also carries around a camera or two or three on a regular basis and videotapes everything about fast cars. And Garrett is really intrigued by the fast cars, but also what this guy is doing, because at that time, YouTube was brand new. And he asks this guy, "What are you doing?" So I got a YouTube channel. Well, what do you do with it? Well, I upload all this footage. So Garrett literally gets a job working with the guy. The guy coins the phrase or the name Cletus McFarland for Garrett. Today, I'm not certain I'm right. I think I am. I think Cletus or Garrett is YouTube's largest contributor. And when I say largest, he's huge. Millions of followers. Nice guy. His channel's fairly clean. You might hear a swear word every now and then, but it's pretty far and few between. He's high energy. He's very considerate of people. And this year, he has lost two of the most important people in his life other than his direct family. In February, Greg Biffle, anybody recognize that name? He's a NASCAR driver. I don't know how him and Garrett got to know each other, but they bonded with each other when Hurricane Helene went up into the South Carolina and really devastated that area. Can't remember the name of the town now. Asheville, South Carolina. They both are pilots. They both have helicopters. And literally within 24 hours of the storm devastating that area, they both jumped into their helicopters and formed a team to do whatever they could for that community. And they really bonded over that time. And I still don't understand exactly what happened, but literally within the last 2 years since that happened, Greg Biffle, the retired race driver, NASCAR driver, got Garrett into NASCAR. And late last year, Garrett raced his first race in NASCAR at Talladega, not on one of the small tracks, on one of the big tracks. And there's been somewhat of an uproar in NASCAR, because there's guys who have been trying to become a NASCAR driver for decades, who started out at 6 or 7 racing go-karts. And they've been racing all of their lives and they don't get the opportunity, but Garrett got the opportunity. The difference is Garrett didn't get there simply by influence. He's very capable. His first race, he was in the top 10. Second race, he was in the top 10. Third race, he was in the top 5. A couple weekends ago, he placed 2nd. He's able to run with the big guys. NASCAR doesn't know what to do because they don't want just anybody coming in as a driver, and they shouldn't. His first race that he was in, he brought almost a million new viewers to that race by TV. NASCAR is going, we can't get rid of this guy. This is money. In February, Greg Biffle, his wife, his kids, and a pilot, 2 pilots, jumped in their jet in North Carolina to come down for 1.5 days to spend with Garrett's family. They took off, the plane circled, something wasn't right. It crashed before it touched down, killed all of them instantly. You and I know about God, his plan. Garrett, I don't know how much. That was a hard blow for him. He's handled it very good on screen. Last week, he gets the news that his former boss, that friend up in Idaho, who really gave him his start, showed him how to get onto YouTube, gave him the name Cletus McFarland, was gone. Garrett, from your and my perspective, is beyond rich. He's got a wonderful wife. He's now got 2 young kids. His businesses are just exploding. What's it going to come to? I don't know what's on Garrett's mind this week, because today's Saturday, Thursday. He was one of the speakers at his ex-boss's funeral. And he didn't talk about God, but it's obvious that these 2 deaths, their losses, are going to affect him deeply for a while. If you feel like you're in your worst trial of your life right now, do we consider that it's myself that put me there? Now, does God allow some things? Yeah, he does. He'll put us through some things to wake us up. He had to wake me up. Thankfully, he didn't take a 2x4 to the back of the head. It was fairly gentle. I still had to go through the bankruptcy and take Lori and the boys with it. Have we considered that he is the only one that can bring us out of it unscathed? Wholly unscathed. Like Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. You remember the story, the account? Not a hair of their head was singed. Their clothing did not smell like smoke. Go to Luke 17, verse 11. And it came to pass, as they were on their way to Jerusalem, that he was passing along the borders of Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him 10 men who were lepers, who stood afar off. And they lifted up their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And when he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And it came to pass, as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, he turned back and with a loud voice glorified God. And he fell upon his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answering him said, "Were not 10 of you cleansed? But where's the other 9? Were there none found that returned to give glory to God, save this stranger?" Why was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thrown into the furnace? Because they would only worship God. And they came out whole. Luke 17, verse 19. And Christ said to them, or to him, the one that returned, he's kneeling at his feet, glorifying God. Christ says, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you whole, complete, satisfied, lacking nothing." 9 were healed of leprosy. They can go on about their lives, but they're not whole. Only one was made whole. The one who worshiped God. Do we worship him at all times, at all seasons, all events, knowing that he is sovereign? He knows what's going on. He loves us. He has mercy on us. And he will get us through this if we allow him to decide what happens next. We're only going to get so far doing it our way. It's only through God that there will be true accomplishment, where we'll be made whole. No matter what we are pursuing next, it should be in true worship with the one who can and will fulfill it. And then all these things will be added unto us.